From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar.
Today I'm announcing a new executive order I just signed that significantly expands our authorities to target individuals, companies, financial institutions that finance and facilitate trade with North Korea.
That was U.S. President Donald Trump on Thursday announcing in New York additional sanctions against the DPRK, or North Korea. RT's Caleb Maupin has more.
Now, from what we understand, these sanctions will target individuals who have transactions with North Korea, as well as any financial institutions that facilitate these transactions.
What we will do is identify new industries, including textiles, fishing, information technology, and manufacturing, that the Treasury Department can target with strong sanctions.
Now, Donald Trump has specifically talked about how the Chinese central bank will be enforcing and preventing the entire Chinese banking system from having any transactions with North Korea. Since the beginning of this crisis, there has been a proposal from both Russia and China for de-escalation from both sides. China and Russia have united and called for South Korea to end its provocative military exercises and to end the THAAD missile system, which is considered provocative and is strike-enabling, in exchange for North Korea ending its nuclear proliferation and ending its provocative missile tests. In the past, economic sanctions and isolation of North Korea hasn't really led to peace. It has really not de-escalated the crisis at all. So the world will watch now and see what happens next as we hear this announcement of new sanctions imposed on North Korea from the United States.
Washington's aggressive tone was the subject of a presentation made by Russia's foreign minister at the United Nations General Assembly on Thursday. This week, the assembly is hosting heads of state from around the world for the annual general debate. The following is the complete presentation made by Russia's foreign minister, Sergei Lavrov, at the UN in New York Thursday.
Mr. President, ladies and gentlemen, in December last year, the General Assembly of the United Nations passed a resolution on promoting the democratic and equitable world order. And it clearly states that it's unacceptable to interfere in the internal affairs of states. It does not accept coup d'etats as a way of transfer of power. It underscores the need to exclude from international relations the attempts to exert illegal pressure of one state on others. And this includes the extraterritorial use of national laws. The absolute majority of member states of the UN voted in favor of the resolution. In the minority were found exactly those countries which, against the goals and principles of the Charter, are trying to dominate in global affairs, are trying to impose models of development, impose their own values on states and peoples. They are guided by the logic of unipolarity, which undermines international law. But the world does not stand still. And we're pleased to see that the President of the United States, Donald Trump, the day before yesterday from this rostrum, unilaterally stated that it's important to abide by the principle of sovereignty in international affairs, that it is important to lead by example rather than dictate one's will to other peoples, that countries with different values, culture, and aspirations can not just coexist, but they can work side by side on the basis of mutual respect. And I think that this is something that we all can subscribe to, especially so if the foreign policy of the United States will be carried out on this basis, exactly. Sovereignty, rejecting interference in the affairs of other states, the equality of peoples, mutual respect. Russia has always abided by these principles in its international dealings and will continue defending it. In the past 25 years, our country, despite difficulties, has honestly gone through its share of the road down toward the elimination of the heritage of the Cold War and did a lot in order to strengthen trust and understanding in Euro and the Atlantic and in the world. This was not with reciprocity on the part of our Western partners because they're made heady by the illusion of the world of history, and they're trying to adjust to today's realities the rudimentary rules that come from the era of opposing alliances. NATO is trying to restore the climate of the Cold War and is refusing to implement the principle they solemnly declared in the 90s, the principle of equal and indivisible security in the OSCE area. The West constructed its policy on the basis of the principle of you're not with us, you against us, and they proceeded with a heedless expansion of NATO to the east, provoked instability in the post-Soviet area, and fostered anti-Russian sentiments. And this policy is where we can find the roots of the lengthy conflict in Ukraine. Despite the attempts through Normandy format and the contact group, the authorities in Kiev are coming up with new ploys so as not to implement their commitments under the Minsk complex of measures of 12 February 2015, which was approved by the Security Council of the UN. But even under these conditions, we're aiming at working constructively, finding mutually acceptable ways of implementing the Minsk agreements. Reacting to the concerns expressed as regards the state of play in the area of security, President Putin launched the initiative to have a UN mission to help protect OSCE observers in the Donbas, and a draft resolution on this topic is with the Security Council. We expect that the Russian proposal will help settle the crisis within Ukraine, which erupted as a result of an anti-constitutional coup d'etat carried out by ultra-radicals. We do hope that there will be constructive without zero-sum game interaction on this with our partners in Europe and in the United States. Here, on the premises of the United Nations, we should not forget about the origins of the United Nations. The verdicts of the Nuremberg Tribunal became a warning for us against forgetting the lessons of World War II and the catastrophic consequences of trying to decide the fate of the world by trampling underfoot the legal interest, the illegitimate interests of other states and peoples. It's a sacrilege to use the guise of freedom of expression in order to condone the radical movements which have neo-Nazi ideology trying to glorify fascists and their acolytes. What is needed is consistent efforts aimed at creating a barrier against neo-Nazism and revanchism, against extremism and xenophobia, towards strengthening international and cultural harmony. While fomenting hatred and intolerance, terrorists, extremists, nationalists destroy and desecrate objects which are of historic, religious, and cultural value. Civilized Europe is allowing the removal of monuments to the liberators of the continent, heroes of the war which laid the foundation for the UN. We think it's necessary to immediately pay priority attention to this issue and the General Assembly and in UNESCO to make sure that we have the necessary legal frameworks in order to stop these kinds of acts. And Russia is planning to come up with a proposal on this. It is unacceptable to remain indifferent also when we're witnessing in Europe the shameful event of statelessness, as well as the suppression of the languages of minorities, which is a violation of Council of Europe conventions. Centuries of history have shown that lasting settlement of differences can only be through dialogue and finding a balance of core interests of conflicting parties. Unfortunately, the arsenal of many Western states have not diplomacy but rough pressure. Using unilateral sanctions above the sanctions which are being imposed by the Security Council is illegitimate and undermines the collective nature of international efforts. Everyone is witnessing with alarm today the newer restrictions by the U.S. against Iran. And they happen to be also extraterritorial in nature, and they threaten the implementation of the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, which became one of the more important factors of regional and international stability. How wrong unilateral sanctions are has been shown a long time ago. The good example here is a more than 50 years long American embargo of Cuba. This is something that basically all member states of the UN have been for decades asking for, and we need to start listening to them. We're witnessing also a very dangerous confrontation spiral around DPRK. We resolutely condemn the nuclear missile adventures of Pyongyang in violation of Security Council resolutions, but Military hysteria is not just an impasse, it's a disaster. All of the Security Council resolutions have to be implemented. No one's arguing with that. But all of them and all of the sanctions have provisions on the need to go back to negotiations. We call upon the end to blocking these provisions. There is no alternative to the political and diplomatic ways of settling the nuclear situation on the Korean Peninsula. We call upon members of the world community to support Russia-China roadmap, which is contained in the joint statement by the ministers of foreign affairs of Russia and China on the 4th of July. It is unacceptable to incite to riots and threaten to use force in order to democratize Venezuela or undermine the legitimate authorities in any country. In any domestic conflict, the international community has to encourage parties to reach a national reconciliation and compromise. The attempts to ignore the opinions of others, use ultimatums outside of the UN Charter, never led to anything good. The upsurge in international terrorism, millions of refugees, waves of illegal migration result to a great part from the reckless attempts to remove the undesirable regimes, including military intervention, which wrought chaos and destruction in Middle East and North Africa and opened up the path for terrorism in the part of the world where they never used to exist. Despite the fact that ISIL is in retreat in Syria and Iraq, we need to make quite a few additional efforts in order to stabilize the region. Let me recall the need to combat not just ISIL, but also Nusra, which for some reason is being spared by members of the American coalition. The development of the situation in Syria is such that it gives rise to guarded optimism on our part. On the 14th and the 15th of September, there was a sixth international meeting on Syria in Astana, and there we formalized the four de-escalation areas. And the agreements on that was reached with the participation of Russia, Iran, Turkey, U.S., Jordan, and the U.N., with the support of many other countries. And these agreements create the conditions for further moving forward towards the implementation of Resolution 2254 on the basis of direct dialogue between the government and opposition, pooling their efforts in the interest of the quickest elimination of the terrorist hotbed and making sure that there is peace throughout the country, that its unity is restored and the acute humanitarian issues tackled. The most urgent ones are increasing the level of humanitarian assistance and demining the liberated territories. We're convinced that these processes, with the leading role played by the UN and without any preconditions, also need to involve all of those who since sincerely wish peace for Syria and its people. Another topic here is the instances of the use of chemical weapons in the region. All of them need to be investigated honestly and professionally without attempts to manipulate OPCW and the joint investigative mechanism of OPCW. Resolving humanitarian issues, bringing opposite sides to agreed, all of this is also relevant for other crises in the region, including Libya, Yemen, and Iraq. In all of these situations, and many other conflicts as well, Russia has had a balanced approach and worked with all parties. Now, when we're talking about the Middle East and North Africa, here we should not relegate to the background and even less so forget the UN solution to the Palestinian issue and the Arab Peace Initiative. We attach great importance to restoring Palestinian unity and welcome efforts made by Egypt in this regard. Russia stands ready to assist in any way in the resumption of direct negotiations between Israel and Palestine to cooperate for this with the League of Arab States and the Quartet. The fact that the Palestinian issue is not settled is being used by the extremists. They use this in order to recruit new new people to their ranks. A string of bloody terrorist acts in the world shows that it's an illusion to try and create separate islands of security. Extremism and terrorism is something that we need to combat only together, without using double standards or hidden agendas, where the main responsibility need to be borne by states. And this is exactly what is provided for in the UN Global Counterterrorism Strategy. We welcome the initiative of the Secretary General to reform the anti-terrorism activity of the United Nations system, which was approved by the General Assembly. And the fact that a Russian representative was appointed to head the new UN Office of Counterterrorism, we view as acknowledging the role Russia plays in fighting the scourge, and we thank everyone for their support. Russia Russia is committed to the goals of having a world which is free of nuclear weapons. Under the existing treaty regimes in the area of control and NPT, its elimination should be the end result of a process of comprehensive and full disarmament while providing equal and indivisible security. Attempts to outlaw nuclear weapons without taking into account the realities of the world today and closing our eyes to all of the factors which influence strategic stability only push this goal further away and undermine the consensus regimes of NPT and the Comprehensive Test Ban Treaty regime. We should reject the idea of militarization of cyberspace. We have to make sure that we do not allow that this becomes an area for military and political confrontation, that the ICT be used as an instrument of exerting pressure or inflicting economic damage of spreading terrorism and extremism ideology. We need to aim the UN at working out rules which are in the interest of all states, rules of behaving responsibly in the digital sphere. We prepared a draft of the Universal Convention on Counteracting Cybercrime, including hacking, and we propose that we start discussing this already in the course of this very session. It is obvious that in the future, the world will continue encountering a whole range of new issues, which will be long-term and which will be truly civilizational in nature. We have no right to dissipate our efforts and strength on geopolitical games. What's needed here is not unilateral but collective approach. The process of creating a polycentric world order is an objective trend. It reflects the redistribution of the global balance of power, the greater role played by the cultural and civilizational identity of people. This is something that everyone will need to adapt to, including those who is used to lording it over others. It is in everyone's interest to not try and constrain this natural process. We have to make sure that the world order is just and democratic, as it was seen by the founding fathers of the UN. Globalization should not antagonize us, but bring us together, take into account the interests of all states without exception, help bring stable and safe future for humankind as a whole. Without mutual trust, it is impossible to think that we will be able to implement the far-reaching SDGs and the Paris Agreement on climate change, or resolve such issues as food security, demographics, and healthcare, which are so important for the developing countries. Among the foundational principles of international relations, we should include the principle of political pluralism, the freedom of choice, and the rule of law. We need to reject military alliances, but rather assist and extend security guarantees to those states which chose neutrality. In the economic area, this means lowering the barriers to trade and investment. That means we have to stop politicizing our economic ties. We should also not politicize the international Olympic and athletics movement overall. Our young people should be nurtured on respect to the cultural and civilizational diversion of the world today. We invite everyone to attend the 19th World Youth and Students Festival, which our country is going to host in less than a month from now in Sochi. At the same time, we in Russia will also be hosting another important meeting, the 137th Assembly of the Interparliamentary Union in St. Petersburg. The main topic there will be strengthening peace and security through intercultural, interreligious dialogue. Let's foster this dialogue between various cultures and religions. Let's stop using historic events in order to stoke hatred and phobias. The philosophy of coexistence, of harmonizing the interests of various countries, is at the basis of the concept put forward by the President Putin, the concept of greater European partnership, open to all states of Asia in Europe and aimed at creating a joint economic and humanitarian space based on the principle of indivisible security. I don't need to say here that ensuring equal rights for everyone, for states and citizens, is something that is needed on a universal scale, is also required by the Charter. This just principle is the foundation for the activity of many entities that we are part in. CIS, the CSTO, Eurasian Economic Community, Shanghai Cooperation Organization, BRICS. This is also how we build our relationship with ASEAN, the African Union, CELAC, and other associations bringing together countries of Asia, Africa, and Latin America. Together, We are going for a more balanced approaches in such entities as a G20, APAC, International Monetary Fund, International Bank for Reconstruction and Development. We believe in the future of the UN, and we want to see an active role to be played by the General Secretary General in helping it realize its full potential on the basis of the goals and principles of the Charter, whilst respecting the prerogatives of international bodies of the UN. We need to be especially careful when we're talking about a peacekeeping reform. We shouldn't be proceeding harshly here and forget the priceless experience garnered over decades. More 2,000 years ago, the Roman philosopher Seneca said, "We are born to coexist together." And the founding fathers of the UN understood this better than anyone. They were convinced of this and put it in the charter. They saw that the coexistence given to us by God on this planet should compel us to come together to save us from the scourge of war. For this, we need to restore today the culture of dialogue. Look for the balance of interest instead of rash decisions and desire to punish the disobedient. We're talking about here about preserving humankind in all of its diversity and multiplicity. Russia has always been and will remain open to joint work with everyone who shows a reciprocal readiness for an equal and mutually respectful cooperation. We will continue defending this approach to the UN in the interest of improved global governance and real democratization of international relations. I thank you for your attention.
That was Russia's Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov, presenting to the general debate at the UN General Assembly on Thursday. His presentation was followed by a presentation from China's Foreign Minister Wang Yi, and we bring you excerpts of that now.
Mr. President, Mr. Secretary General, dear colleagues, the theme of this year's General Assembly session, focusing on people, striving for peace and decent life for all on a sustainable planet, is a most relevant one, especially for an organization that has made exceptional contribution to peace and development. This organization has been upholding peace as its mission by setting up a collective security mechanism, diffusing regional hotspots, and deploying peacekeepers. The United Nations has proved instrumental in preventing full-scale wars and securing over seven decades of relative peace for mankind. This organization has been pursuing development as its goal by setting a global development agenda and mobilizing resources worldwide. The UN has helped a great number of developing countries get on the fast track of development that will lead billions of people to modernization. Mr. President, dear colleagues, with the ideals of the UN yet to be attained, countries must make continued efforts. We live in an era that is defined by a deepening trend toward a multipolar world, the collective rise of emerging markets and developing countries, steady progress in globalization and IT application, and an exciting new round of revolution in science and technology. In mankind's pursuit of greater development and prosperity, there are great opportunities like never before. We live in a world that is witnessing profound changes in the international landscape and balance of power. Prominent traditional and non-traditional threats, insufficient driving force for global growth, and growing backlash against globalization. There are unprecedented challenges for mankind's pursuit of lasting peace and sustainable development. We are once again at a crossroads. It's time to make the right choice between peace and war, between openness and seclusion, and between unity and division. 2 years ago, at this very podium, Chinese President Xi Jinping called on us to foster a new type of international relations featuring win-win cooperation and to build a community of shared future for mankind. This is a great vision proposed by President Xi based on his full grasp of the prevailing trend of our times. It is also China's answer to what kind of future mankind should build. It is highly aligned with the purposes of the UN and aspiration of its member states. With the understanding and support from the international community, it can inspire us as our common goal. Mr. President, dear colleagues, to ensure peace, development and dignity for all, the UN spirit must be embraced and the work of the UN must be driven forward. The UN must remain the guardian of world peace. Upholding peace and security is one of the core purposes of the UN Charter and primary mission of this organization. The UN must encourage all its members to live together in peace with one another as good neighbors and achieve common, comprehensive, cooperative, and sustainable security. The five permanent members of the UN Security Council must play an exemplary role in upholding no conflict, no confrontation, mutual respect and win-win cooperation. All UN members should treat each other as equals and choose dialogue over confrontation and partnership over alliance. In state-to-state relations, credibility and justice must be upheld and efforts must be made to find common ground, manage differences and seek peaceful and reasonable settlement to disputes. In fighting terrorism, we need a holistic approach. We need to abide by law and avoid applying double standards. One must not associate terrorism with any particular ethnic group or religion. The UN needs to spearhead and coordinate efforts to build a global united front against terrorism. Political solution is the fundamental answer to hotspot issues. Parties to any conflict must stay committed to the general direction of dialogue and negotiation. The international community should act in an objective and impartial way to facilitate dialogue and promote peace rather than stirring up trouble or making things more difficult. The UN should serve as the main channel of conflict prevention, fully leverage Chapter 6 of its charter and step up political mediation efforts. The Syrian crisis has seen the early light of political settlement. We should make good use of the Geneva and Astana channels and push with greater vigor for direct substantive talks between the Syrian government and opposition. In parallel with the talks, efforts must be made on cessation of hostilities, humanitarian assistance, and post-war reconstruction in order to give people greater faith in peace talks. The Palestine issue has been stuck on the UN agenda for 70 years. The international community owes the Palestinians a just solution that is long overdue. All settlement activities on the occupied territories and all violence against civilians must be stopped immediately. Efforts should be made to steadfastly advance political settlement based on the two-state solution and to restart peace talks as early as possible. We need to think out of the box to facilitate peace through development and help the people in the region to lay the groundwork for peace. The situation on the Korean Peninsula is now a focus of international attention. The 19 September this year, that is 2 days ago, marks the 12th anniversary of the 2005 September 19th joint statement of the six-party talks. At the time, the six parties, China, the US, Russia, the DPRK, the ROK, and Japan, with China being the chair of the talks, made concerted efforts, and the two major parties concerned, the US and DPRK, made the political decision. And we have formulated the roadmap to denuclearization of the peninsula. The DPRK undertook to abandon all its nuclear programs, and the US undertook to normalize its relations with the DPRK, all parties committed to setting up a permanent peace mechanism for the peninsula. The statement opened up new vistas for regional peace and stability and inspired hope for peaceful settlement to disputes. 12 years have passed. Some may think that things have changed on the peninsula and the joint statement has become outdated, but we believe that things following the progressive trend of the times never become outdated, and decisions on the right side of the history never become obsolete. If there is any change, anything we need now, it is denuclearization that is more comprehensive, more thorough, and more irreversible. There should be no new nuclear weapon state, whether it is in the north or south of the peninsula, whether it is in the Northeast Asia or other parts of the world. We urge the DPRK not to go further on its along a dangerous direction. We call upon the US to honor its four no commitment, and we call upon all parties to play a constructive role in easing tensions. There is still hope for peace, and we must not give up. Negotiation is the only way out, which deserves every effort. Parties should meet each other halfway by addressing each other's legitimate concerns. In China's view, the day when the denuclearization of the peninsula is realized should also be the day when a peace mechanism is established. China is always a force for peace. We have made tireless efforts for a peaceful settlement of the nuclear issue on the peninsula. Whatever changes may take place, no matter how long it will take, and whatever difficulties we may face, China will stay firmly committed to the denuclearization of the peninsula, to upholding dialogue and negotiations, and to regional peace and stability.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.